Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast, the America Invents Act and the On Sale Bar to Patentability Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On December 4th, 2018, the Supreme Court heard argument in Helsin Healthcare versus Teva Pharmaceuticals USA. This case arose out of a dispute over the validity of a patent covering a product used to reduce the likelihood of chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting. At issue in this case is whether agreements entered into by Helsin more than 1 year prior to filing for patent protection put the invention, quote, on sale, and thus would invalidate the patent. Although the meaning of on sale in the Patent Act was long believed to be settled, the 2011 America Invents Act, AIA, made changes to the statutory provisions that included the, quote, on sale bar. The question for the Supreme Court is whether these changes to the statute change the previous understanding of the term on sale. In April 2001, Helsin entered into two agreements with MGI Pharma. Although these agreements were announced in a press release, specific information about the products, like the dosing formulations, were omitted. In 2003, Helsin filed a provisional patent application covering the product. Three patents arose from this provisional patent application prior to the enactment of the AIA. However, one patent was subject to the new provisions of the AIA. In 2011, Teva sought FDA approval to make a generic version of the patent product. Helsin sued Teva for patent infringement based on this ANDA filing. Teva argued that the patent was invalid because Helsin's agreement with MGI put the product on sale before the relevant date. The district court rejected Teva's argument, concluding that the AIA had changed the meaning of on sale to require the invention be made public by the sale. Because the dosing information was not provided in the press release regarding the agreements, the district court concluded the agreements did not make the invention public and there was no on-sale bar. The Federal Circuit reversed, holding that inventions are made available to the public whenever there is a commercial offer for sale and that the sale is public even when the details of the invention are not disclosed to the public by the sale. Thus, the on-sale bar applied to Helsin's patent. The United States Supreme Court then granted certiorari to address whether, under the AIA, an inventor's sale of an invention to a third party that is obligated to keep the invention confidential qualifies as prior art for purposes of determining the patentability of the invention. And now, to discuss the case, we have Kristen Osenga, professor of law at the University of Richmond School of Law.
Before talking about what went on at the argument, first a little background on the case itself. This case involves patent law, and specifically what types of prior art may be used to reject a patent application or invalidate an issued patent. At issue in the Helsin case, are definitions of prior art set forth in the America Invents Act of 2011, or the AIA. Prior to the AIA, Section 102 of the Patent Act listed as prior art instances where, quote, the invention was patented or described in a printed publication, or, quote, in public use or on sale in this country, before the critical date for that patent or 1 year prior to the filing date of the patent application. And the purpose of this provision is twofold. First, if technology is available to the public for over a year, the public would come to expect that it was available for them to use and is not protected. Second, there was a concern that if a patentee could put something in public use or on sale over a year before filing for a patent application, he might be able to unfairly extend the limited patent term by exploiting the invention pre-patent and then also enjoying the exclusivity of his patent term after that. Because of this second purpose, the pre-AIA statute had been interpreted to include secret sales activity and commercial uses by the patentee. So although the AIA tracks the previous Section 102 of the Patent Act, it adds a bit of a twist. Specifically, the definition of prior art, now at Section 102A1, includes if the invention was, quote, patented, described in a printed publication, or in public use, on sale, or otherwise available to the public before the effective filing date. Now, the change from critical date to filing date is part of the United States' move from a first-to-invent system to a first-to-file system, and it isn't really important in this case. What is important is the addition of that last little bit, quote, or otherwise available to the public. Because of this additional language, the United States Patent and Trademark Office and others have argued that the earlier listed categories of prior art, and in this case specifically the on-sale category, is modified to include only sales that are available to the public. Under this interpretation, secret sales and secret commercial uses by the patentee would not count as prior art under the AIA. The Federal Circuit, on the other hand, rejected this interpretation of the statute, holding that the pre-AIA understandings of the statutorily listed prior art categories remain the same, and that the addition of otherwise available to the public is not a modifier for those categories, but a catch-all for unanticipated types of prior art. So essentially, this case is a classic version of two methods of statutory interpretation. So which one will win out? So the question before the Supreme Court was whether, under the America Invents Act, an inventor's sale of an invention to a third party that is obligated to keep the invention confidential qualifies as prior art for purposes of determining the patentability of the invention. So with that background in mind, let's talk about how the oral argument went down. The petitioner in this case began by arguing that the phrase, otherwise available to the public, was added to the AIA to clarify the list of prior art types. Why should a private or secret offer for sale be a bar to patenting? With respect to this point, the justices noted that prior art types pre-AIA were pretty clear. Why would they need to be clarified? And that private offers for sale still put something on sale under the plain meaning of those words. Additionally, the justices pointed to the purpose of the provision, specifically the idea that we don't want the patentee to obtain an extended term of protection by exploiting the patent pre-patent application and then also having his exclusive term of the patent. The petitioner responded that the other purpose of the provision, protecting the public domain, was stronger and implied that any type of prior art requires some level of public availability. The next part of the exchange with petitioner's counsel was about statutory interpretation and what Congress did and meant. Specifically, the justices remarked that if Congress was trying to make a change to the term on sale, there are much clearer ways to do so. In fact, earlier drafts of the AIA suggested certain changes to the prior art definitions, but these changes were not retained in the enacted statute, suggesting perhaps that Congress intended the term on sale to mean exactly what it did prior to the AIA. And that included secret sales. Petitioner's counsel responded that Congress kept the term on sale to tap into some of the jurisprudence that had developed around that term, specifically some Supreme Court cases that defined on sale as requiring the invention to be ready for patenting. But the addition of the otherwise publicly available phrase was intended to remove some of these lower court case law that opened up the term on sale to include secret or private sales. As counsel noted, the Supreme Court has not spoken explicitly on secret prior art, so the interpretation the petitioner was seeking is perfectly consistent with their precedent and also supports the argument that Congress did not intend to ratify lower court opinions that allowed for secret prior art. Finally, the justices asked petitioner's counsel about a law professor's amicus brief that stated that the Supreme Court's jurisprudence did actually endorse secret prior art. Counsel disagreed with this and said no Supreme Court case law involving the prior art category of sale or public use would be upset in adopting the proposed interpretation that required some level of public availability. So next up was the solicitor's office. The solicitor's office argued in support of the petitioner and in support of the patent office definition. The solicitor's office noted that the public would not be aware of the transaction at issue in the Helsin case. And so because of that, it's an entirely different scenario than other cases that came before the Supreme Court to discuss the meaning of on sale. On this point, the justices seem skeptical. A sale, even a private one, between two commercial entities would be understood by those involved to be a sale. So from here, the justices changed direction and asked the solicitor's office about whether there really was settled case law in this area, and if so, how secret sales were treated. The solicitor's office responded there is no settled case law, and therefore Congress can clarify and modify the provision. Without settled law, Congress should not be seen as ratifying any previous position, and whatever they say is new. As to Congress's efforts to more directly address secret prior art that were removed before the AIA was passed, the solicitor's office said that early proposals went too far, were over-inclusive of what counted as prior art, and were unpalatable to a number of members of Congress. But the AIA passed as a middle ground, overruling secret prior art, but not including some of the over-inclusive provisions that were part of the initial drafts. So moving now to the respondents' argument. Not surprisingly, counsel for respondents started with a plain language argument. On sale means what it has always meant, sold or offered for sale. There's no public availability component required. Instead, they argued, the catch-all otherwise available to the public is a new category of prior art added by the AIA to the existing categories. The justices questioned counsel, stating that respondents' interpretation could be expanded to read something like this: on sale publicly, on sale privately, or otherwise available to the public, which seems to be an absurd reading. The respondent argued that many on-sale events are public, and even if the phrase refers back to on sale, any sale in the eyes of the law makes an invention available to the public in some respect. A better reading, counsel argued, is that the phrase otherwise available to the public was intended to broaden, not narrow, the scope of prior art categories to include things that weren't previously covered under pre-AIA 102, like oral presentations. In that case, if Congress was trying to broaden, then it would be odd to add a category of prior art on one hand, but narrow an existing category of prior art on the other. Counsel noted that to prevent upsetting settled law with respect to the pre-AIA prior art types, it makes a lot more sense to consider the otherwise category as a brand new catch-all. Now, at this point, the justices injected some delightful hypotheticals into the mix that I look forward to using when I teach going forward. Justice Breyer presented a hypothetical of basketball, running, swimming, or games that otherwise involve a ball as an incoherent analog of how 102A1 would read under the respondent's argument. The respondent's counsel agreed that that string of phrases would be awkward, but it still wouldn't upset the ordinary meaning of swimming, just like the inclusion of a catch-all in 102 shouldn't upset the ordinary or at least existing definition of unsale. Justice Kagan then offered one of the best hypotheticals. She said, suppose I say, don't buy peanut butter cookies, pecan pie, brownies, or any dessert that otherwise contains nuts. And then she asked if she would violate that statement if she bought nutless brownies. Obviously, the implication was that nutless brownies would be okay under the hypothetical, and by analogy, non-public sales wouldn't offend 102. The respondent's counsel handled this by responding that the term brownies could include nuts or could not include nuts, but the ordinary meaning of the word sale necessarily includes both public and private. To which Justice Kagan mused that perhaps the problem is not the catch-all, but the definition of the word sale itself. A number of the other justices picked up from this point, for example, asking, if on sale is ambiguous, should we defer to the Patent Office's definition that 102 after the AIA excludes secret prior art? Respondents' counsel maintained that the transaction at issue in the case was unquestionably a sale, and that the relevant industry, in this case the pharmaceutical industry, would understand it to be one. On rebuttal, petitioner's counsel stated that respondents' interpretation would impermissibly read the word otherwise out of the statute, and also that there was no legislative support for the interpretation of otherwise available to the public being a catch-all. He ended by repeating that petitioner's interpretation was not inconsistent with any Supreme Court precedent, and thus their interpretation should stand. If I had to guess, I think this case will probably come out in respondents' favor, that otherwise available to the public creates a new type of prior art that supplements the existing prior art types from pre-AIA 102, and that those categories should be continued to be interpreted in the exact same way they were before the AIA was enacted. I think in general, the Supreme Court would rather have more options for patents to be held invalid or patent applications to be rejected. So the respondent's interpretation that allows for secret prior art to be used and for otherwise available to the public to be defined as a new catch-all rather than a modifier would increase the amount of prior art available, which the Supreme Court would likely approve of.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.